Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Wednesday to you. Reminder, we are off tomorrow because the Cardinals play at 1:15, but we did a podcast which will drop tomorrow at 10 a.m. Matt Pauly joins us from the ballpark. Hey, Matt.
Hey.
So before we jump into how great yesterday was, do you have some updates for us, Wheels?
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about this a little bit on the Redbird Rush Hour, but you have a couple roster moves today. One expected, and that was Michael McGreevy going back to Memphis because he's not going to pitch for at least 6-7 days. So they don't know exactly when they'll use him, so they want a member of the bullpen to take that spot. So Matt Svaundsen is back. So that move was expected. And then the other one was not, but Jordan Walker is now on the injured list. He has appendicitis.
Wow.
Which sucks.
Yeah.
but thankfully, it's not like a new injury, like a elbow or shoulder or anything like that. So he's out with appendicitis, and then Jose Fermin has been called up to take a bench spot. So as we'll get into more later on, Matt, it certainly means that we're going to see a lot of all of the guys we've been talking about. I mean, Burleson's going to be continuing to play. Nolan Gorman's going to stay in there, and I mean, that's probably what was going to happen anyway, based on what Ollie Marmol had said here this week.
Yeah, I think what we saw, the fact that Burleson and Gorman are each swinging the bat the way that they are, they got to keep those guys in the lineup as much as possible, and they've been doing that for the most part. You hate that Jordan Walker has appendicitis, and hopefully this is not something that keeps him out for an extended amount of time, but in terms of just the you know, trying to get guys the runway, as they've talked about so much this year, that kind of clears it out a bit.
So, Dave, Matt and I were texting about this last night after Gorman homered. So, after yesterday, he is now an above-average hitter for the season.
Wow.
So, that's how good he's been in June.
My Lord. Like,
so, he was, you know, before June, it was well below average. He was struggling. But that just kind of shows, A, how hot he's been, but, B, that it wasn't a really large sample size before. Because
like last year.
Right. Because he kind of started off like up against it playing time wise, because he was kind of the 10th man the way the season started. But, you know, Matt, he is officially now an above average hitter for the 2025 season. And I'm not sure that what he's doing in June is sustainable, but certainly being above average and being a solid player is sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, we were trying to, you know, talking on the text last night, how do we really describe above average? He's in that average range for me, especially, you know, what his OPS is. He's got a 740 OPS now for the season, which is fine. That's
and
perfectly
league average
fine.
Is like 715.
Yeah, so if he finishes out the year with a 740 OPS, I don't think anybody's going to be too angry about it. But what he's doing in June is spectacular.
Yeah.
992 OPS. So he's basically got 1,000 OPS in the month of June. He's playing more and more. I get messages sometimes from people on my postgame show that say, well, Gorman's only going to hit when you kind of pick and choose spots and don't play him every day. And I don't think that's right.
No.
Because here in the month of June, the more he has played, the better he has hit.
And for the season as a whole, and we were talking about this earlier, Matt, with Dave and I, we're talking about Eric Fetty, who's pitching today, and how some of the underlying numbers aren't as strong as his real numbers. Gorman's the opposite. His underlying numbers are better than his real numbers, which indicates that not only is the season total real and believable, but it's actually probably going to keep getting better.
Yeah, it should. If the underlying numbers do what they should do, then yeah, he should continue to be better. I mean, you don't love the strikeout totals; those still
no,
pretty
no.
high. But you deal if you're going to be a 1,000 OPS guy, you can deal with him striking out one out of every three at bats.
Well, the thing that's changed, Dave, if you were to say like just naked eye watching Gorman lately versus last year, what do you notice?
Pitch selection.
Yeah, because, I mean, last year, what did you see? You saw him basically swinging at everything. And, you know, what we're seeing now is a lot more like what we saw in 2023 when he hit 27 home runs. Mm-hmm. So he's chasing a lot less. So, and again, I'm not going to bore you with too many numbers. But last year, he was in the bottom third of the league in chasing pitches. Mm-hmm. And he was about league average when it comes to his walk rate. Mm-hmm. And this year, he's in the top 30% in chase rate instead of the bottom 30%. And he's in the top 12% in walk rate. So the fact that he's not chasing bad pitches is why he's having success. And it's what he was good at when he had his big year just 2 years ago. So this is the guy they want him to be.
he still has 11 strikeouts in his last six games.
Yeah,
now, all the while, he's hit a couple home runs in there as well. But the strikeout, even in the month of June, 21 strikeouts and 56 at-bats. That's a strikeout every 2.5 at-bats for him. It's the strikeouts are still an issue. I'm not
Big
trying
time.
To run away from that. But you can learn to deal with him if, again, he's got that 1,000 OPS to go along.
Yeah, well, I mean, the strikeout rate, from 2023... That's the year that he hit 27 home runs despite missing, I think, 30 games. So that would have been a 30-homer season had he not been injured. 800 OPS. His strikeout rate this year is better than it was in 2023, and it's certainly better than last year. It's still not great, right? It's bottom 10%, but it used to be bottom 3 or 4%.
Go ahead, Sam.
I'm sorry.
Please, Matt, you go.
Okay, so something that Oliver Marmol has talked about recently is the fact that they kind of took something away from a bat speed standpoint to allow him to start making more contact.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a coincidence that I just mentioned the 11 strikeouts in his last six games. I think the strikeouts going back up coincide with bat speed coming back a little bit as well because he is slugging more. So you get more slug from Gorman, you're going to get more strikeouts from Gorman too.
So I was going to ask, today, I believe, is officially the halfway mark of the season, which makes me kind of sad because I'm going to be so sad when it's gone. But my question for you two is the runway season. How has it gone for the first half of the season, both execution and who has benefited and who has not?
It's fine. I mean, you know, look, Nolan Gorman's playing right now. Jordan Walker's played a bunch this year. Alec Burleson is playing right now. I'm kind of done talking. I'm not trying to be dismissive of your question, Dave, but right now, you know who's playing? The guys who are playing are the guys who are performing. So it's not about a runway anymore. It's about the guys who deserve to be in the lineup. Now, hopefully for the Cardinals, what's going to happen is guys that they want to continue to take a look at are the ones who are going to continue to play well and be given that opportunity / runway. But at this point, it feels like these lineup decisions are really being made more based on performance than they are on just getting a look at guys.
Yeah, but that's been an evolution, though.
It has.
That wasn't the case in April, and it was less the case in May, but it's been more of an evolution as the players have sorted themselves, right? Like, I think we've learned a lot about Alec Burleson. He's gotten better against left-handed pitching this year, and he's never been good at that, so that's a big evolution for him. He's starting to hit more home runs, which is another big piece of evolution. We found out about Ivan Herrera. Like, he's real. He's legit. Like, that's a big deal. And you're right, the lineups are going that way, but it didn't start that way. That's how the season is evolving based on, which is good, I think, because it's based on evidence. It's not based on a preconceived idea of what any particular player was going to be. But I think we found out a lot, and the idea of the runway was to find out about players, right? We found out a lot about Burleson in a good way. We have found out a lot about Ivan Herrera, Matthew Liberatore. Those are huge. Those are three big pieces. We're still incomplete on Gorman, and we're still incomplete on Walker, but we got half the season left to start figuring more of those things out.
And I like the even today, they're facing a lefty today. They're stacking some righties, which isn't something that's super easy for them to do. Thomas DeJacy's in the lineup, batting sixth at second base. Garrett Hampson is going to get his first Cardinal start. He's in center field today. He's a right-hander. The only left-handers who are in the lineup today is Donovan in the one spot, Alec Burleson there in the two spot, and Nolan Gorman in the seventh spot. Everybody else is a right-hander. So those are smart lineup decisions that are being made.
Talk to me a bit about Victor Scott II.
He's struggling right now. I think that this is just something where it's a young guy who's going through his first full Major League Baseball season. The league has adjusted to him. He is working to adjust back. Now, I think we are seeing him continue to play high-level defense, which is important. He continues to be very impactful on the bases. But in the month of June, he's hitting 182 with a 564 OPS. His own base is at 318. So he's trying to get things going. He does have three hits in his last three games, so I guess that's a step forward for him. But this, you always knew that there was going to be growing pains that went along with him. He's as hard of a worker that's out there. We've talked about the notebook that he keeps on everything that's going on. He's going to find his way out of it. It's just it's taking some time right now.
See, now he's a guy where the strikeout rate bothers me. He's in the bottom 15% in strikeout rate. So he's not far off of Nolan Gorman. But Nolan Gorman is trading some of that because he hits home runs. Victor Scott is not a home run hitter. He's never going to be. Now, he'll hit a few. He's a good athlete. He's strong. But it's not his game. That player should be more contact-oriented, and it worries me that he's having trouble with that. not just lately, but on the season. But the good side is he's actually drawing walks, which means he's doing a good job because nobody is pitching around the number nine hitter, right? Nobody's walking the fastest guy in the league on purpose. Like, he's earning that. So that's a good sign, but he needs to make more contact. And you know, this whole power versus contact dynamic that people talk about around the game is not about a one size fits all. It's about every player knowing who they are. And Vic, he needs to make more contact. He swings and misses too much, including at pitches in the zone.
Yeah, I think sometimes people, you mentioned, Kevin, the one size fits all. Like, we know the Ozzie Smith story with Whitey about hitting the ball on the ground. Well, that was great for Ozzie because he had tons of speed.
An AstroTurf field.
Yes, that helps as well. You know, people hear those type of stories and they think that they should apply that to every baseball player walking the face of the earth. Most baseball players, you don't want hitting on the ground. We've talked about that a ton with Jordan Walker because Walker's got the ability to, you know, drive it, lift it, put it in the gaps, put it over the wall. But for Victor Scott II, you're right. Go make contact. And those strikeouts have really gone up. And the walks have gone down, Kevin. In the month of June, he only has 5 walks after he had 9 walks each of the previous 2 months. So it has been a struggle for Scott.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about – I don't want him to hit it on the ground. You know, that line drive approach is perfectly fine for him. And then if he misses it, he hits a home run or he hits a ground ball. But it's just the putting the ball in play part. Like, you know, when you're a speed guy, that's an important part of the game, especially when you're already drawing walks. You know, if he puts the ball in play a little bit more, he's a scary player, and he'll get there. Look, again, Matt, you made the biggest point of all at the beginning. It's his first full season. You know, he really struggled last year, and he overcame that. He's still learning, but that's the skill that we should be paying attention to with him.
I have a leadership question for you guys. I know the Cardinals were pretty distinct, Matt, going all the way back to early spring training, that they're going to be speaking with one voice, and that voice is going to be Mozeliak. I believe Mozeliak has made some noise about possibly stepping aside before the season's over. Are we having Heimblum sightings? Do we know what function he's doing right now?
Yeah, so I haven't seen Heim on this homestand. That doesn't mean he's not here, but generally I do see him when he's around. He's pretty visible. I think when Mo's talking about stepping aside, I don't think he's talking about leaving his job. I think he's talking about, at some point organically, the decisions that they're making this year are going to have more impact on next year than they are this year. So Heim's got to be involved in that. And at that point, Heim's voice will grow larger than Mo's voice. So don't take that as Mo stepping away from the job early. Just take that as Heim's going to end up having the final call on some of these decisions at some point as this year goes along. We see Heim a lot. He doesn't live in St. Louis yet. He's going to move his family here at some point between now and next season. His family is still in Boston. But yeah, I see him here a lot. I know there's a lot of communication going on between him and everybody else. He's continuing to work very hard when it comes to what's going on in the minor leagues and player development and everything that goes along with that. He had a very clear, defined role in this organization in terms of getting that humming along, and that continues to be, as far as I know, his number one responsibility.
Yeah, it sure seems like, and I think Mo has even said it, and I'm not saying word for word, but has talked about this, that he's going to be in on it. He, being Bloom, is going to be in on anything that has an impact beyond this year, right? Because it's going to be his responsibility when, you know, Bloom's responsibility once you get past it. But let's just say, theoretically, there are moves that will only impact this season. Well, he probably will still have a voice, right? Because you're trying to communicate about everything. You want a bunch of ideas and a lot of different views and opinions on players and decisions and things like that. But it would be more Mo weighted that way. Let's say you were trading Eric Fetty, who's up at the end of the year, and acquiring a player who's a one-year, you know, rental for the rest of the year and not giving up anything of note, or maybe one for the other, right? Not a prospect. And then maybe that is more of a straight Mo move if you're talking about something that only impacts this year. But most things don't. Most things have longer-term impact. So, of course, you know, Bloom's going to be a part of any of that.
Okay.
And then what's going to be really interesting, I think, Matt, I think that how does this go? You know, this offseason is going to be fascinating because it's going to be the first time that Mo is not the voice of the team since 2007. I mean, that's a long time. So how does Bloom communicate? Where are the similarities? Where are the differences? How does he value players? Do they keep doing things the way that they've done? Probably not, because it's a different person and a different view. So, you know, when we get to the offseason, it's going to start to get really interesting on that front.
I would remind folks, though, that a lot of the hires from this past offseason, the Rob Serfolios, the Pierpont's, the Days, guys like that, those are kind of Heimblum hires. You know, he was in on that. Guys came into the organization knowing that Heim was going to be their next boss after 1 year under Mo. So the transition of doing things a new way has already started happening because of those people in very high leadership roles already being in their jobs.
Excellent. Thank you, Matt. We appreciate it. Have a great game.
Thanks.
All right. Interesting stuff. Welcome back, guys. DGS. Short little segment here because we went long with Matt Pauly. Isn't it amazing? Sometimes it strikes me that sports are so stupid. Like, they're absolutely meaningless, and billions of dollars and billions of hours and so much passion and fistfights. But then I think sports and games have meant so much to me in my life.
Yeah.
From the beginning through my athletic career, even today when I start playing baseball again. Like, we are entertainment-driven species.
Yeah, we like distraction.
We do.
And we also like mental challenges, right? Part of being a sports fan is figuring out the puzzle. Mm-hmm. You know, like, when are we going to be good again? Are we good enough this year? How's it going to go? Who are the players that I like? Who's going to be the future? Like, all of that's fun. And it's no different than enjoying movies. It's no different than enjoying music.
It's a great way to place love and hatred in safe places.
No, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
And think of the, like, healthy outlet it is for so many kids out there. Like, kids who would be, like, getting in trouble, doing stuff they're not supposed to do. They can channel that into sports. And just for me, like, on my tennis journey the past year or so, like, I never really played sports growing up. But learning those lessons of, like, having humility, learning the discipline, like, making yourself do the things you need to do in order to succeed, it's very important. It's like, I get what you're saying. Like, ultimately, it doesn't really matter who wins the game, but there's so many lessons to be learned along the way.
Yeah, amen.
Yeah. And again, I don't know why we do. We're weird. We've always had this, like, certain forms of entertainment are more valuable than others. The reality, they all present cool things if you observe them the right way and pay attention.
Yeah.